All right, guys. Welcome once again to your Adonis Lifestyle Podcast. I am Brad Howard, and I've got John Barbin on the phone. And today we're going to pause a little bit from the interview series and kind of give everybody a little bit of a break because we've got lots of questions that have been coming up about some different things. And I know John had some things he wanted to tackle today on body dysmorphia, some depression and mood states that people have been kind of chiming in on. And I think we're going to go into basically how to deal with the naysayers too, because apparently that's kind of coming up, and it's kind of hard to, I guess, tell people what you're doing because people keep pulling the "that's not healthy" thing or whatever. So we're going to handle and tell you how to handle that as well. So John, I mean, we got the just, I guess, why do you think it's so hard for people to believe, or guys to believe, that there's a certain pound, or just poundage of muscle that's kind of coming in here? I mean,
this is never going to go away. Clearly, I mean, we talk about this. I feel like we talk about this every week, and every week somebody else, brings it up again. And so, I guess the few people that we've managed to reach, I guess that's just it. It's just very few, and everyone else still believes this concept that everyone believes that they can just get bigger, just like just keep going with it. And I don't know. I mean, we've already talked about this. It's an aggregate of role models that are unrealistic role models. And I think it comes down to a suspension of disbelief. And it's like an egotistical thing. Like it's not seeing the whole picture. So I guess the other way of saying it is, if you have, like, let's say you want to look like Arnold Schwarzenegger or Mark McGuire or any one of these guys that have been exposed for using drugs. And then let's say that's not necessarily your model, but you have another model in your head who's almost of similar size or approaching their size. Well, what makes you think that other person isn't using drugs? So the concept is, like, if it looks like a duck and it walks like a duck, it's probably a duck. So I think the entire bar has been shifted up, like, bigger than any of us realize is naturally possible. And it's kind of, like I said, the big guys in your gym, athletes, models, some celebrities, the celebrities whose bodies you'd ever want to have anyways, and bodybuilders all use drugs. And they just don't, if you're in those circles, you just know that. And if you're not in those circles, you're just looking at some of them going, well, somebody in there somewhere has got to be a body I can get to, but you just can't. So I just don't get why. I don't know. I guess guys just don't get it until they've been through it. And so I guess my other thing is, if you actually think you can just say, I want to put on 20 pounds of muscle, well, go ahead and do it and then show me. And we used to, me and Brad Peel, used to joke about Bill Phillips in the old EAS muscle magazines, Muscle Media 2000. We added up all the different ads where he would be promoting a muscle building supplement, or another ad where he promoted a fat loss supplement. And if you added up every time he said he'd gained muscle or lost muscle, it was like literally 300 pounds gained and 300 pounds of, fat lost, if you added up every time he talked about it. Or is he always talking about the same 10 pounds? Like the same 10 pounds up and the same 10 pounds down, which is, that's actually what he's talking about. So when you hear about these people who've, gained 20 pounds of muscle, like, this is how you have to look at it. How old were they when they started? How old were they when they finished? How long did it take? Did they actually measure their body body fat percentage and just their body compartments to know if some of the weight gain wasn't just water or fat mass? How did they account for any of that stuff? Who validated that that's what their numbers actually were? Was it a fasted weight or a fed weight? Like, all of those things can go. I just don't believe any numbers I see on anybody online or even in magazines or athletes, because these are all the variables that go into how big someone, quote, how heavy someone actually is. So this is the dysmorphia. This is, like, all part of where the dysmorphia comes from and why guys just don't know what they're – like, when a guy says he wants to put on 20 pounds, he doesn't even know what he's saying. He's just trying to say, I just feel like I need to be bigger. And then that's rooted – I guess that's rooted in this – male, alpha male instinct of being less of a man if you're not big enough, like if you're physically just not big. And I mean, But the actual how big you can get is kind of related to your height. So if you can't get any taller, you're kind of screwed on that one too. So, and you just got to accept the fact that you have genetic limits. And that's one thing it seems like no guy is ready to do is accept their genetic. I know I wasn't. Christ, for years right. I didn't want to accept it. And then now I get it. And oddly enough, I'm back down to the size and weight I was before I ever tried anything. So go figure. And that's 15. Yeah. That's 15 years of training. So
right.
So if I haven't done it in 15 years, I just somebody somewhere show me like how the hell this is supposed to happen.
Right. Well, the other thing too, like you brought up, I mean, the fact of the matter is that when it comes to body weight, I mean, there's no basically like accepted protocol for weighing yourself. Like the FTC hasn't stated in their thing that if you're going to report weight on your website or on something, then it has to be a fasted weight. It has to be this. I mean, there's not like this.
Oh, how many hours fed? How many hours fasted? How big was the meal before? How much did you eat the 2 days before? All of those things can change your weight. Yeah, exactly. So
sure,
we can do a, you and I could do a before and after that's 35 hours apart, and we could record a 12-pound weight gain or loss. And in a bod pod or in an actual, in a scientific, piece of equipment that measures body mass, all of it would look like lean body mass if we just drank a bunch of water.
Right.
So we could make it look like we gained 12 pounds of muscle in like 2 days. So it's what does that mean? It doesn't mean anything. But on a website, you could put that up. So it's, I don't know, guys are getting all caught up in pounds. And thinking of it in pounds doesn't make any sense because you're talking about a fixed measurement, so a pound, right? Like, so the ruler you're using is a pound, but you're talking about it on relative bodies. So by that I mean there's two relative things to account for. A pound is different. 1 pound of weight gain looks different on a guy who's 5'5" versus a guy who's 6'5", right? Like, I mean, we'd all agree would look bigger on the 5'5" guy, right? And also, is that guy an ectomorph, an endomorph, or a mesomorph? In general. Like, they don't – obviously not necessarily on the extremes, but if you tend towards endomorphy versus ectomorphy, 1 pound may be very realistic on the one end, and it may not be as easy to achieve on the other end, but it may look bigger on the ectomorph guy. So, like, if you account for height and somatotype, now that 1 pound means something way different for those two different bodies. So it's kind of silly to measure in pounds when you're like, pounds on who? Like, a 5'2" girl losing 10 pounds looks way different than a 5'10" girl losing 10 pounds.
Sure. So, well, and the other thing, too, is that, like you've discussed before, I mean, in order to gain 20 pounds, there's no way in hell you would gain 20 pounds. I mean, it'd be tough to do anyway, but just in your upper body. So
you can't fit 51 or 52% of your muscle masses in your legs. So if you actually even want to gain, if you're concerned, and for some reason it's just your life's mission to be heavier on the scale and it all has to come from muscle, you've got to train your legs like crazy because half of that weight's going to be in your legs, just over half.
Right. So, yeah, so the other thing is that not only – I mean, this is kind of the way I'm looking at it. And, we were looking at an interesting illusion earlier. But the fact of the matter is that if everything is growing at the same rate, well, then nothing looks like it's any bigger. There's nothing relative to each other to actually judge a difference. You just look like a little bit bigger of a you. So that's kind of the other.
And we're not saying don't train your legs. We're just saying if anyone says they want to be heavier, most of them don't. I don't even think they know what that means. Like sure. That means half of the time you spend in the gym, you're doing your legs. And I know of nobody that does that besides powerlifters.
Right.
Because that's the only group of people I know who train their legs that much. And I mean, do you just want huge legs? Like, for what? What's the point of having big legs?
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, I mean, if legs are over half of your muscle, but in general, in most workout splits, other than upper body one day, lower body the next, it's usually legs get operated on either once a week or once every 3 to 4 days. So it'll be like a push, a pull, legs.
But you can split it however you want. It's just getting back to the, like you just said, if you're just getting back to the concept of being heavier.
Sure.
Like you would be kind of not doing yourself a service if your goal was being heavier but not training legs at least. Theoretically, you should be training just slightly more than you do your upper body because they take up slightly more muscle mass than your upper body. So if you actually were concerned at all about purely just being heavier, part of your goal should be to have the biggest butt and legs you could get.
Right, exactly.
Which is okay. So I just don't get it. I just don't get what guys think that would what would do for them. I think this is rooted in. I actually think this is way more deeper rooted than just the alpha male stuff. I think it has more to do with like a sense of, as weird as this sounds, a sense of freedom. Because if you kind of view yourself as, well, once I'm big enough, I'll be the alpha guy and no one will mess with me and I'll kind of just have my way with things. That sort of is, if you peel away all the layers of it, really what you're saying is I want to be big enough to be able to do whatever I want.
Right.
And that's kind of, I think, where it's all rooted. But you just, like we've talked about before, you can't just big your way through society either.
Sure. Well, you know what's funny is, and I'll bring something else up on that too, but I was just thinking about this. This is going to be funny. But not only if you built your legs up to be, you know, the way that, you know, we're talking about, I mean, not only would that make buying clothes just ridiculous, because shirts and stuff are kind of, they change based on size a lot easier than the jeans do. So, like, you could have a 32-inch waist but huge-ass thighs, and then you're screwed because you'll never be able to buy jeans. And then on the other thing is that, you know, most of us are lifting to, you know, to either to intimidate other people to a certain degree or to get chicks. And if you're building your legs that big, it's just going to make your pecker look smaller.
I suppose that could be one other side effect.
I mean, it's all relative, right?
I never thought of it that way, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's why you want your waist to get smaller, because it'll make your thing look bigger.
Part of it, yeah, I guess.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, so it's like not only – well, so you can see it too. So you can like look down and, you know, you can actually see it. That would be great. But, you know, the other thing would be just that whole – like, again, going back to that illusion, you know, the bigger you would make your legs, the smaller it would make that.
Well, and how silly would that look on bodybuilders who, like, are really big, like really big, and also considering the drugs cause some shrinkage in that area too. So you end up, yeah, probably, well, whatever. Anyways,
oh, yeah.
The idea of just being heavier is it's sort of a pointless goal unto itself for, like, that's not stating. I mean, I wish people would stop saying, I want to gain 15 pounds, and actually say what they want. They're like, I want more respect, or I want more attention, or, you know, I'm hoping there's a way that I can get more respect and more success out of whatever it is I'm trying to do, and right now it's not happening, so somehow I think being heavier is going to do it.
Yeah, like, it's like that surrogate endpoint you keep talking about with, like, protein synthesis and stuff.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
that.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Pounds of being heavier is a surrogate endpoint to something else that you're lacking in, which is probably self-confidence. Maybe you're awkward socially, or there's something else going on, and you somehow think being bigger is going to solve it all, and being heavier is going to solve it all, and it just isn't. So it's kind of like you can focus. I mean, I'm focus on something else. I don't know. I mean, now I'm going to disclaim this. We're not saying don't work out. Clearly, we're saying. There's definitely a necessity to like build your body into its best form. We're just saying that doesn't equal being massively heavier. That's all.
Sure. Well, the other thing too is that, I mean, we've already kind of handled this on a mass basis. If you haven't checked out the video I did on Twitter, that muscles are bad video, it was kind of just me messing around, and I actually got up there and asked. I mean, like, tons of women are replying to this, you know, if there's such thing as too much muscle, all this stuff. And you can go to adoniseffect.com/muscles-r-bad. And, you know, you can watch it. And you can see real time as I'm asking women this question, and they're actually responding and saying, I mean, 99% of the women, literally, you can look, and they're all like, yes, you know, muscles, really, really huge muscles are gross, you know, stuff like that. But then they turn around and say they do like muscles, but just not like super-duper-duper big. So I don't even know if that's a word, super-duper-duper.
Yeah, well, it is now. It is now.
Yeah, so that's another thing on the podcast, fellas. We make up words.
Yep.
So you can check that out and look for yourself. And the other thing that was really funny, if you have not watched that video or if you need to revisit it, the fact that the two guys that actually chimed in on it were like, oh, yeah, there's no such thing as too much muscle. So the two guys that were chiming in when all the girls are like basically saying, oh yeah, that's nasty and all this stuff, you know, they're reading all these results real time, and yet they're still, the proof is there.
They're still trapped in their Adonis complex.
Right. Not the Adonis index, not the Adonis effect, but the Adonis complex. You probably should Google that because that's a little bit of a different thing.
Yeah.
But it's, it just amazed me. I was sitting there while I was doing this thing, and this is real time. I could not fake this, right? You're sitting there, and all these responses are coming in. We're talking, you know, 400 to 500 to 600 women, like just replying back and forth, rapid fire. It was one of the most ridiculous things I've ever seen. And even though this is what's being said, you know, these guys are like, oh yeah, like it was just not happening, like whatever was real, that what's happening in real life, what they believed in their head was, they were like, oh yeah, just because this is happening in real life, this is not really what it is.
Well, yeah, because they can't get. They can't get it out of their head that they have to, it's because they're losing, they have to get rid of the belief, or they're not yet ready to accept that they can't keep getting bigger. So they need to cling to it. They're literally on the Titanic while it's sinking, and they're like, no, this ship is okay. This ship's just perfectly fine. And they just can't accept the fact that this isn't how it works. So, and I was like that for years. Like I remember when me and Brad really figured out that you just, the amount of muscle and then bulking up doesn't work, and like we had the raw data to prove it. I was like, man, and now I look back going, of course. Like everyone around me had been training for decades and weren't any bigger. Like,
sure.
What was it? We just didn't have the right training split. We trained every day, all day long, as much as we could. We trained as much as we could without literally being Olympic athletes who have all day to train. So I'm like, what? I don't get where else we can go with this. And of course the data was going to say that. Like it made perfect sense that when we saw it, it was like, yeah, no, you know, there's a really fixed amount of lean mass you can build. And once you've built it, that's it. You've got your lean mass built. And then you can refine that, maybe try to build up certain muscle groups, which is what we talk about. And, you know, shave away some fat and just keep a lean looking body, and none of this bulking and cutting. See, I've always asked people this too. Once you bulking, if you're going to bulk and you're going to eat a caloric excess to bulk, even if you're only eating, you know, somebody was back and forth with me on the blog saying they're going to try 500 calories in excess. I'm like, if that's going to help, why wouldn't 5,000 calories just be 10 times better? And then why wouldn't 50,000 calories be, you know, like whatever, 50 times better? Like, why would you stop at 500? And that's what other fitness marketers or personalities have told them is like, oh, that's doable. Like, that's all you need. I'm like, well, then and they're also accepting the fact that they're going to put on fat with those 500 calories. So I'm like, well, if you're telling me 500 is going to work for building mass, but you are also know that some of that 500 is going to be fat, and then eventually you're just going to diet the fat off, why wouldn't you just stop at the calorie amount that's just enough to build muscle? So let's say 250 calories. Let's say only 250 of those extra calories were going to your muscle building, bulking. Why wouldn't you just stop at 250?
Right.
Or, and again, these are all unanswerable questions because all of this is just hokey. Like none of this actually happens. If it actually worked, who would stop? Why wouldn't you just eat 5,000 calories extra and just be that means I would be 10 times bigger than you. So if your goal was bigger and your goal was to build muscle and eating more food was anabolic, why wouldn't you and I be – why wouldn't we be eating right now? Because we could just get bigger and bigger, and no one can tell me when that stops. So does that mean if you eat 500 calories in excess all year, you're gaining all year long and next year and the year after that? And if that's the case and part of it adds fat, do you just spend the next 4 years of your life getting fat and then you cut down to show off whatever muscle you had? Like, you see how incompatible these theories are? And, like, there's no end to it, and no one can tell me where the number is. They just say some amount more.
Right. Well, there's two things. Number one, I mean, even if we go into the bodybuilders, even as roided up as they are, I mean, they still hit that point where even if they're bulking up and down, they're still only 2 pounds heavier than they were last year. And you don't even know if that's true because that's depending on if they dialed in right or not.
Oh yeah, and I mean, we put up that video ages ago with Dorian Yates talking about how bodybuilders probably skew their numbers, and that he himself only looks for 2 or 3 pounds a year. And I mean, that's the reigning Mr. Olympia at the time with every drug imaginable in his system, and he couldn't even put on more than 2 or 3 pounds a year. So I don't understand what everybody else thinks they're doing.
Sure. And the other thing is, kind of going back, well, I know why, marketers and people like that with muscle building, same with fat loss, they say that you should eat in caloric surplus and, you should low carb and stuff like that, because you can see an instantaneous result, damn near instantaneous result on the scale. The scale is the most obvious and available measuring tool that people have. And so all you need to do is eat more, and basically you'll pull more glycogen in, which will pull more water, which means you'll get heavier. And
But that's all transient. Yeah, like you can bloat up a muscle over a 20, 24, 48-hour period with, like what Brad just said, some creatine, some glycogen, and some water. But that's transient. And it has an end. Like you can't just keep doing that for like weeks and weeks and months and months. Like there's a finite limit to that.
Well, it was funny. I remember somebody wrote something about Tim Ferriss or whatever, and you know, like his blog, like his book, stuff like that. But he did a blog post where it says he gained 30 pounds of muscle in 30 days or something like that. And basically what he did was, he ate like 5,000 calories a day, and then he got in a bod pod, and Lord and behold, his body fat remained,
the same. I mean,
it went up a little bit, but he gained 30 pounds in mass. Well,
the food in your system gets recorded as lean mass.
Yeah, the food in your system, the water increase.
Yeah,
and what nobody else noticed was that his waist measurement actually went up by 4 inches as well.
So he was just like bloated as hell.
Exactly, and it was lean mass. So you can register that on the scale. Same thing with low carb diets. People say, oh, you got to go low carb. Well, the first thing that happens is you eliminate excess water off that, right?
Yeah, that's why really big people like. Not muscle big, but people who are like really overweight, when they start a lower calorie diet, one of the first things that they drop a massive amount of weight because they're not in that inflamed sort of they're not retaining as much water. They dump a bunch of water right away, and they're in a lower inflammation state. So like, I know guys who've gone on the really big guys, like 300, 350 pounds, and not drugs or anything. They're just fat. And, in the first 2 or 3 weeks, they drop 20, 25 pounds. And that's not 25 pounds of fat. That's just how inflamed and how bloated they are from water retention, just from their current overeating habits. I mean, that's how all that extra strain they've been going through just from all the extra food they've been eating. So, sure. And then that initial drop, that just gets them down to like a more of a realistic functioning kind of body. And then from there, they're starting to chip away at the fat.
Right. And then the other thing is, if let's say even if we get into the, when you're dieting down hardcore and people are scared about losing quote unquote muscle mass and things like that. I mean, even with, if what you're saying is correct, even with the bod pod and stuff like that, I mean, you're really not going to be able to register the water loss in a muscle. So you're just going to assume that your muscle disappeared. Is that right?
Well, I mean, the problem is it's really hard to know where – I think people think modern science actually has all the answers here, which we don't yet. There's still controversy over what exactly how exactly muscles hypertrophy. Like, they know that they get bigger, but when you biopsy a muscle, you can find muscle fibers that aren't necessarily bigger within that muscle that's – if you just measure it by a tape measure, the muscle's bigger. But then you look down at smaller units, and they seem to be the same size, and – so it's kind of hard to tell exactly what's going on because some of the structure of the muscle changes, like the concept of pination, like the angle that the muscle sits on, the fibers sit on changes, so that increases muscle strength and density and how it's packed in there. So it's muscles become stronger and adapt all different ways before they get really bigger. So kind of bigger is the last thing it does in response to training. So it's, again, yeah, it's kind of hard to tell with water going in and out of muscles. Also fat, there's intramuscular fat, right? There's fat inside the muscle cell too. So mm-hmm. it's like if you picture a steak, there's like that big piece of fat on the outer edge of the steak. That would be the same as your subcutaneous fat. But then within the red of the steak, within the meat itself, there's fat in there you can't see. But there's still fat inside the muscle fibers. So that also goes up and down as you get bigger and smaller. So like your muscle gets leaner, I guess you could say, like the muscle itself. So it's you might look smaller, but you still have all the same muscle. So there's all kinds of things that go into the composition and how you look. Basically, it just comes down to look. I mean, there's no point in measuring all of weight and all that. Do you look good in the mirror? Do you like the leanness and how big you are? And then if you want to be as big as the guy in the magazine, you have to do what he does. And if he uses drugs, you have to use drugs. And that's fine if that's what you want to do. But if you don't want to – it's like people want the drug look without the drugs. And I'm like, you can't have that. You have to accept right. the fact that that look requires those drugs. And you know what? I'll kind of half retract that. People think they want the drug look, but they don't know what that look looks like up in person. I've said this before, but models in magazines don't look as big as they look in person. Like even your typical Men's Health model is massive compared to what he looks like on a magazine. And when you meet him in person, you're like, whoa, he looks like a huge bodybuilder. But on the magazine, he doesn't actually look all that big because, you know, at some point you've seen a picture of an even bigger guy, like a bodybuilder or like Mark McGuire, or like one of these enormous guys. And you're like, well, okay, that's big. Like that's really big. Well, maybe I'll just look like the Men's Health guy. But then you meet him in person, you're like, holy crap, he's big too. And so like they're all like, I don't know. The magazine just really makes them look smaller than they are.
Well, they just got better proportions, and so you can't judge the size in the picture.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, and I've been in photo shoots and stuff, and I've seen these guys up close, and I've met bodybuilders, the biggest ones in the world up close, and I just can't believe how big they are. But then in a magazine, I'm like, man, you just don't look that big in a magazine. But in front of me, I'm like, you're bigger than – like you look like the size of a rhinoceros. So well, I just
like, – go ahead. I was gonna say, that's like looking at like Ronnie Coleman videos on YouTube. And you're just like, I was watching him one day, and I was like, holy shit.
Oh, I mean, but have you ever seen those guys? And then he gets even bigger when you see him in person.
But that's what I'm saying. I mean, from the picture, he looks one size. But then you see him in the video, and you're like, good God.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's the progression. A flat picture, they look the smallest. A video, you kind of start getting an idea of how freakishly large they are. Then when you meet him in person, you're like, okay, that's not human. And that's basically the progression of how big they get. So when you see like a bodybuilder who's, you know, 5'7 and 225 ripped, that's absurdly large. Like that's just absurd when you meet them in person, that's when you realize you can't do that like without drugs. You're like, oh, I get it. Like his, you know, a 23-inch arm or a 22-inch arm, you just can't do that. But in the magazines, it's weird. They just don't look that big. And that's actually something that took me forever to wrap my head around how much different they look in person than in a magazine.
Sure. Yeah, like, I mean, that makes sense.
Yeah, we did a photo shoot with a guy who was 350 pounds, and he was lean at, like, between 3 and 350. And I couldn't believe how big he was. Like, I was just like, okay, that thing's not even human. Like, he might actually have us for dinner if we're, like, not careful. Right. And it was the most absurd thing I'd ever seen. But the camera washes – I don't know, the word's not wash out, but the camera really changes – that look. And it's, I mean, you know, for anyone who hasn't been to a bodybuilding show, go to one, just go check one out and you'll see what I'm talking about. You'll see how weird it is when you meet them. And even them on stage isn't right. You got to see them up close. And then you start really seeing how different this stuff looks. And if you can catch a show of someone who's also in a magazine, then you can see how sort of different it really looks like live versus the magazine. And then you can kind of get an idea of how the proportions really change.
Well, let me ask you this, now that we're kind of talking about this type of stuff, because I just popped in my mind. How much mass on you would you say, let's say me, both of us were 6 foot, how much lean mass that we are holding right now is not muscle, like in pounds? Just a rough guess.
Oh, the lean mass that's not muscle?
So bones, brains, organs, like how much of our weight – Or the other way, how much do you think is muscle?
Well, no, it's just a percentage, right? So I don't know. I'd have to work it out, but it's most of your lean mass is muscle, like most of it. But you also have to remember, like I don't know what the percentage is. I'd have to look it up. Me and Brad were actually working on that the other day. But with bodybuilders, I would bet that some of that other mass that you're talking about, like organ mass and stuff, that also goes up too. So they may be heavier. They may be disproportionately heavier than their even muscle mass would indicate because some of that other mass grows too. Like steroids don't just stop at muscles. They cause sort of everything to grow. So you get like all that internal stuff growing too. So you know, some of the inflated body weights you hear about, might be partly due to that as well. So you, again, here's another contributing factor to the unrealistic ideal of where you think you, how heavy you actually might think you can get.
Well, I guess what I'm trying to do is put in perspective the growth. So, I'm totally guessing. Tell me.
I'll poke around and get these numbers and I'll put them up on the podcast notes on the blog.
Yeah, because I guess what I'm thinking in my head is this. Let's say it's 70%. I don't know if that's high or low, but let's just
skeletal muscle. Yeah, it's probably something like that.
So let's say it's 70%. Let's say if my lean body mass right now, let's just say it's 160 pounds. I don't know what it is. I'm actually getting my body fat tested tomorrow, so I'll probably be able to tell you tomorrow what it is. So let me look at this calculator real quick. So let's just say 160 times 0.7, that would be 112 pounds of muscle that I would have on me right now. Now, if I was going to increase that by 20 pounds, that would put me up to 132. So 112 divided by 132 would be, 84. So basically what you're telling me is that in 2 weeks, if I can put on 20 pounds of muscle, I'm going to increase the amount of muscle on my body by 15%.
Yeah, no, that's unrealistic.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, when you put it in that context, it's kind of like...
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, so I see what you're doing. You're trying to tease out the poundage. You're bringing in another variable of how body weight in pounds. It's even more unrealistic because of lean body mass, and now you're just talking about muscle mass and not including the rest of lean body mass.
Right, exactly. So basically, right, yeah. if you're going to be able to increase your muscle mass...
Yeah, so when you're comparing yourself to a bigger guy, let's say he's taller than you, there's other things that contribute to him being heavier than you. That's why the rule of sevens applies. Like when a guy's taller, he's not just heavier because his muscles are bigger. He's heavier because everything's bigger. Bones are bigger, organs are big, the whole thing, everything's bigger. So it's, right. That doesn't mean, if a guy's taller than you and he's 10 pounds heavier, that doesn't mean he just has 10 pounds more muscle. He has 10, like, there's all kinds of stuff that's going into him being bigger. So right. that's why we tell people your weight is really, really tied to your height. And then the next level, the next thing it's tied to is your somatotype. And once you accept those two things, then from there, there's a range of muscle mass you can build.
Right. And the other thing that's really funny too is that like you say, you and I are the same height. And I remember a guy on your blog was, and when you put your picture up when you were 184, he was saying, "Was that possible? Because you've been on roids before, so maybe that bumped you up a little bit." But you know what the funny thing is that we're the same size, roughly,
yeah.
all the way around. I mean, height. I mean, we look different, but
we're probably very similar somatotypes too.
Right, but that's what's going to be funny is at the end game, and you're probably in a month when we end up. Well, you're ahead of me, but I'm down to one. By the time this plays, I'll be at 188 roughly. So you'll probably got me by about 5 pounds, maybe a little bit more. But at the end of the day, we will probably end up at the same weight, at the same AI.
Yeah. I mean, that's how we should.
Sure.
Because neither you nor me are our somatotypes are kind of sort of in the middle. Neither of us are kind of straying either way towards the end. So it makes perfect sense that we'll more or less be within a couple of pounds of each other.
Right.
And that will look different. Like that's sure. There's all kinds of nuances into how somebody looks. So like your chest, shoulders and arms and everything will just look, that's the look you'll have and I'll have my own look. But and it's funny because we'll look totally different, but when you throw the measure around us, it's like, yep, that the proportions are the same, but the actual shape of your shoulder and your chest will be slightly different.
Right.
So, I mean, I don't know if people get that. We're not talking about, like, literally you come out of a cookie cutter looking the same, but the proportions will be similar. Like, the slope of your trap might be slightly different. The curve of your actual deltoid might be slightly different. The way your shoulders hang will slightly be different. But in general, the taper and the ratios will be the same.
Yeah, I guess what will be interesting is kind of once we get to where we are, and all of us are kind of at the same rough body fat percentage, so that'd be me, you, and Pilon. We could actually kind of show rule of sevens because obviously we're the same height. He's a couple inches shorter than us, and so he's going to naturally weigh less. And so we can actually prove and show everybody scale-wise, you know, based on height, roughly where you're going to want, where you're going to weigh. So it's really going to help people out in the transformation contest, I think.
Yeah, yeah. I got a couple other guys I was training that were taller than us, so we can get them to, and then kind of just do a sort of a range of heights.
Sure. Okay, so let's talk about, I guess, some of the depression-type mood states that we're kind of running across. I mean, I get it because, you know, we've all kind of been there and stuff like that, but I think you've been getting some different comments on the blog and in the forums and stuff.
Yeah, since Pierre's interview, we've actually had a couple people mention that they went through sort of a similar thing where their view of their body, their body dysmorphia, their irrational idea of what their body should look like contributed to feeling lousy about themselves and even, you know, in their words, depression. And I can see that. If you have an ideal that A, you can't get to, B, it's not even fair because you could have never gotten to it. It's not that you're not getting to it because you're not dedicated. It's because you just can't. So like, think of how lousy that is. You're working towards something. You're doing everything that the media tells you. You're doing everything magazines told you. You think you've done research and you think you've dug up the real ways to do it. You spend money on supplements. You work your ass off in the gym. You do everything everyone's told you and you're still not getting there. And even worse, like we've talked about earlier in this podcast, your sense of self-identity, like confidence, you know, pride, like how much of a man you are is all tied up into getting to this poundage goal and you can't get there. Like, no wonder. I'm surprised people don't shoot themselves. Like, no wonder people aren't, you know, no wonder people feel lousy. Like, it's, the exercise is supposed to make you feel good, not worse. And, like, working out and not getting to an unrealistic ideal is, that's one good way of taking something that's supposed to help de-stress you and put you in a better mood state and just wreck it and make you feel, you know, worse. So I can see how, I mean, I bet you more people experience this than we know about. I just bet guys aren't talking about it. But it's, I can see how guys get demotivated. They just go to the gym and are like, well, this sucks. Like, this is another month that I'm not any bigger or heavier or whatever. But then when you flip it around and you're like, oh, I'm only, you know, point two away from a golden AI, that's a whole other way of looking at it. And that's, you know, that becomes a very realistic goal. So none of us are that far away from looking really good. I do know how it got this way. People are just looking to unrealistic models. And I think this still comes to the root of you don't need to be that big to be successful, and you don't need to be that big to have respect, and you don't need to be that big to, you know, be in a successful relationship or be successful at work. It's just, you just don't need to be big. I mean, maybe this is rooted in when you're a kid and you want to grow up being like a pro athlete, and you just don't grow up as big as the other kids, and you're like, huh, you know what, there goes my, I'm not going to be a linebacker, I'm not going to be the quarterback, I'm not going to play pro baseball. Like, maybe when those sort of, you realize that it is unfair and it's, you know, you just can't, not everyone can be Tom Brady. You just can't. It's just, if you're not built like that, you just can't have it.
Yeah, you know what's funny is that, you know, we were kind of laughing about this earlier, but, you know, typically one of the things that happens, and from what I've seen a lot of times with guys, is that there's this three-headed dragon that you basically kind of compare yourself to other guys. And it's basically cash, chicks, and body. So it's you know, how much cash do you have versus another guy? You know, can you bang more chicks than he can? And does your body look better, or can you kick his ass? That's pretty much it. You know, when you're kind of comparing people to, you know, like if you meet a dude, the first thing you kind of wonder is, okay, what's this guy do? Does he make more money than I do? You know, the second thing is, you know, you look around and see how women relate to him, and you're wondering if, you know, he's you know, can bang more chicks than you, you know, and like I say, I know that's kind of crude the way to put it, but that's, I mean, let's be honest. That's really kind of what it is. And then the other thing is, you kind of,
and it's not even whether or not he does, it's whether or not you believe he can, or whether or not you believe he has a better selection of girls throughout his life that he could have gotten close to than you could.
Sure. And so here's a crappy part about it is that as a percentage, it's, you know, most dudes don't make a lot of cash. I mean, most dudes aren't rich. As a percentage, most guys aren't really good with chicks. And so those two by default, and if you couple that together with, you know, most dudes don't have a good body, I mean, I get it. I understand why people feel kind of bad. That's why I've always said that, you know, building your body and getting that part handled is like the best inner game changer ever as far as confidence and stuff, because, you know, you can, number one, you can actually see change happening. I mean, it's not like, you know, it's not like, oh, you're going to get more confident. I mean, you can't measure that, but you can measure your waist going down, and other people can comment on it and stuff like that.
Yeah, and I commented on this before I made this point on my blog. It's all relative. The only reason I asked this question on the blog, I'm like, would you still work out and watch your diet if no one else, if you were the only human left on Earth? And anyone who said they would was lying, because I was amusing watching people try to explain why, but you're not the only feedback you get on whether or not you're in good shape is from other people. Like, you actually, I mean, we're kind of helping out with our index, but our index is based on research from the reaction of other people. So it's, sure, it's nothing. That's the whole point of living is interacting with other people. It's like the social attention you get, and the quality of that, and the quality and quantity of that attention as based on the quality of the people you're getting it from, I guess you could say, or the quantity, whatever. That's all we're after here. So
right.
If, you know, I mean, there's nothing else to be said about it. So it's completely relative, and it's completely dependent on everybody else. I mean, that's, mm-hmm. that's why, you know, changing the shape of your body matters, because because it matters to everybody else. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I'm actually reading something really interesting right now, and it's a bunch of research, just psychological research and stuff like that. And basically it says that the human mind does not think in absolutes. It only thinks in relative experiences. So just kind of what we were talking about, it's not, you know, how good is your body compared to where you were a lot of times. Well, actually it is, because that's kind of relative. It's not kind of where's your body as an absolute. It's either where is your body now compared to where it was, or where's your body now compared to everybody else? Same right. thing with money. It's like,
and you'll quickly forget about where your body was, and if you do change your body, you'll actually start forgetting about where you were, and you'll start comparing yourself to a new class of people to compare yourself to.
Sure, it's like a perfect example. We talk cash. There's I was reading something the other day, and it's so true. Everybody I know that does this, they like they'll go out and buy a Porsche. And then the guy I know bought a Porsche. And then, you know, he was driving a Porsche for a while. And then he wants a Ferrari, because, you know, all the people he's hanging out with want Ferraris. And finally, he just, instead of buying the Ferrari, he just said, you know what, man, forget this. And he went out and bought a Toyota Prius, because he was tired of living the Porsche, the one-up lifestyle that he always felt like he had to keep going up and up and up and up and up. And so that's probably the other thing that happens with muscle building as well, is that the more you gain – you know, the more you kind of are relating to other people, and you can see they're bigger than you, so you got to kind of climb. I think you probably were there.
Yeah, like, as soon as you latch onto the concept that being bigger does something, it's a trap, because there's always a guy that's bigger than you. Like, unless
right.
you're 7 feet tall, there's always somebody who's bigger than you.
Right.
If you measure it by just, you know, size, I don't care how you measure it. If bigger, if just the concept of bigger, heavier, taking up more space matters, there's always another guy that takes up more space. There's always a guy that's stronger. Like, are
right.
you actually the biggest, strongest guy in the world? Probably not. And if that's your goal, that's kind of a dumb goal. But if being bigger has something to mean something to you, then you're kind of, you still have to accept the fact that there's always going to be a massive chunk of guys bigger than you.
Sure. And it's kind of showing off, or you think it's showing off, but it's really weird, because just like getting bigger in that regard, you know, another guy I was talking to, same thing, you know, he cash wise, he was buying, you know, buying cars and bought a Ferrari or whatever. And, you know, he had this Ferrari for like 4 months or whatever. And he went back to the dealership or whatever, and was going to trade it in, you know, and try to get something downgraded or whatever. And the guy was like, and the salesman was like, dude, what are you doing, dude? This is a Ferrari. What are you downgrading for? He goes, dude, man. He goes, I've been driving this thing around for 4 months, and it still didn't make my dick bigger. So
he kind of got it, yeah.
Right. So at that point, he realized that, and I've kind of been there in that regard too. You buy something like that thinking that it's going to increase your status, And realistically, all it does is increase your status with the people you really don't want it to increase your status with.
Right.
So it really only increases your status with the people who care about that type of thing, which realistically, that's kind of the people you don't really want to be around anyway.
No, that's the spiral of bodybuilding. You end up in these weird circles of guys who are just interested in being as big as possible. And you need to stay there because that's where you get all your feedback from. That's where you all get your – this is the whole relative argument we're making. It's relative to what? And who's giving you positive feedback? Other guys that think it's cool to be 250 pounds.
Right.
Like, and then don't dabble in it. If you really want to be big, go do it. Like, don't talk about it. Just go do it.
Yeah, don't dick around. Well, the funny thing was that I was watching a YouTube video of one of our buddies, and I just came across it. And in one of the comments, is actually on his blog, and this guy's – he's pretty big. I mean, he's not a small guy at all, lean guy. And one of the guys on his blog was like, dude, you need to work on your traps. I was like, what the
– Yeah, exactly. See how weird that is? Like they'll look at a guy who's in great shape compared to 99% of the entire population, and they'll pick out one little thing on their body and be like, you can work on that. When I worked back at one of the big supplement companies, that's what it was inside. Like everyone in marketing and research, like everyone worked out all the time, and people, it was weird. It was like they would look around at who had the best quads and who had the best hamstrings and who had the, like that was weird. And everyone got like, whoever had the biggest traps. I think I might've been one of the guys with bigger traps. So I was like, I was way up on the list for traps. And then, Pilon had a really big chest for his size. So he was way up on the list for chest. And it was just like, this is weird. Like it's weird. Now, like that's way too getting too familiar when you're like dissecting down dudes' bodies like that. So maybe everyone listening hasn't taken it to this extreme or been around people who took it to this extreme. I guess what I'm trying to show people is this is how far it gets, and you gotta draw the line somewhere, and you gotta just like accept. I think part of this, I guess bringing it back to the whole mood depression and how the body dysmorphia affects, how if you can actually be upset with yourself if you don't get a handle on what your ideals are. It gets back to setting a realistic goal and also appreciating what you have. Like appreciate, if you're an ectomorph, appreciate the fact that you've got the ability to get ripped like nobody else. And if you're an endo, appreciate the fact that you've got thicker, bigger muscles than everybody else.
Sure.
That's it. Just don't look to the thing you don't have. Look to the thing you have.
Right. I want to touch back on this three-headed dragon thing really quickly because I just thought of this, and I think people are really going to kind of be able to grasp this, especially when it comes to the body dysmorphia and in the depression and things. Like when it comes to cash, chicks, and body, if you're gaining cash or trying to get better with chicks or trying to get a bigger body for the sole sake of trying to improve your identity within yourself, then you're kind of doing it. It's kind of weird. I'm not saying you're doing it for the wrong reasons, but this is what's going to happen, is that with cash, and I see it all the time, guys do all this stuff to build up money just for the sake of building up a bank account so that that can be their identity. They have a lot of cash, right? But then what happens is that now they're all stressed out about losing their cash, because if they lose their cash, then that's who they are. It's gone. Same thing with guys that are good at that try to get better with women and stuff like that. They try to get into this covert manipulation and stuff like that. But what tends to happen later on is that because it's not the core of who they are, it's technique and all this other stuff, that type of thing can quickly be taken away from somebody. So people get really like weird, I guess you could say, and you have a different type of insecurity that kind of goes on because, that can be taken away from you, and then that's your identity. You're gone. And so the same thing with your body. I can understand now where people are so freaked out about losing muscle because they've got that wrapped into their identity in the same regard. And all of a sudden, if their muscle goes away, then their identity is vanished and they're not cool anymore.
Yeah, like I'm 5 pounds less cool than I was 5 pounds ago. You lose that much. Yeah, so what you're talking about is this is an identity crisis, basically, is what,
right.
And like everybody on earth goes through an identity crisis at some point.
Sure.
And part of it is, in all three of these instances, you're talking about locating the core of your identity outside of yourself or on a surrogate a surrogate endpoint, a surrogate thing that just shouldn't be. Like the amount you weigh on a scale should have nothing to do with who you think you are. And sure. The amount of money you make, it matters from like how you can provide for yourself and your family and whoever and those sort of things. But it still doesn't – it's still not really who you are because it's still an artifact of the country you live in. Like there's – you can be exactly who you are and the greatest person on earth. But if you're in a – if you're unfortunately born or end up in a country that's got a collapsing economy, well, you can't identify yourself with money anymore because it's still relative to your surroundings. Same with girls, like whether or not you're smooth and whether or not, you know, people react to you well in public. And I mean, just socially in general, that's still external. I mean, it shouldn't really matter. Like you're quantifying who you are with all of these things that are outside of you that shouldn't really matter. If you get yourself settled and get yourself straight and you're comfortable with yourself, all of those things will be where they should be for who you are.
Right. Every single one of them is basically you're trying to prove something to somebody else to make yourself feel better. I mean, I was there, dude. I've done it all. When it comes, I mean, cash, you know, chicks, even body. I mean, I haven't went as far as you did because I'm kind of not a fan of needles and stuff. But like,
and you know what? Neither was I. I was scared to death of them.
Yeah. But like money wise, I mean, dude. I mean, I did it all. I mean, I would run the account down, you know, blast up the credit cards just so I could make it look like that I was rich.
Yeah, like you try to look like a high roller at the bar, yeah, by everyone around.
Spend money, and I would say, oh man, it's only money. I could always make more. I mean, stuff like that. And then I realized, I was like, dude, this is, you know, all I'm doing is impressing a bunch of people who aren't really impressed. You know, the people I really wanted impressed are more impressed by net worth, not by how much you spend. So I was like, okay, well, and so that's why it helped when we started, you know, really working on this project and, you know, some of the other projects where I could just be like, well, this is more fulfilling than, you know, trying to do all this other stuff. I mean, this means more. You know, I'm not – who cares about all this other stuff? And same thing with the chicks thing. And, you know, I got to a point, you know, when I was single where, you know, you could go out every night and just blow it out and have a good time. And you know, it was to the point where my happiness was based on other guys – telling me how great I was because I could do all this stuff. But realistically, I was just like, it wasn't satisfying. It just meant that I could pick up lousy women.
Yeah. And it only mattered to somebody else who couldn't even do that.
Exactly. And so that was kind of the thing. And, you know, even, and so you reevaluate, you're like, man, this isn't really making me happy. In fact, this is making me think of women even worse because I'm just hanging around a bunch of women that aren't really that great. So now I'm getting them to cheat on their husbands and husbands and boyfriends and all this stuff. And you know, now you're starting to think bad of them. And, you know, same thing with the cash thing. You start seeing other people doing stupid stuff and you start thinking bad of that lifestyle. So, and same thing with, I guess, the bodybuilding thing. I mean, based on what you said, that same mentality, you keep going more and more and more thinking that it's going to help. But the only people you're impressing are the other people that are in that realm, but it's not helping you in anything else. In fact, every single one of these things is overtaking your entire life for some reason.
Yeah, like God forbid you're good at it, because then you become the freak who's defined by that completely. Like, right. one of my buddies, he's 350 pounds. He's 6'5", and he's massive. He's the biggest human being I've ever met. I'm chatting with him in the gym. He just, you know, he comes up to me and tells me his new goal is 400. Are you kidding me? Like 400 pounds.
Yeah.
Like he's not that tall. Like that's enormous. And I'm like, okay, maybe he'll be the one guy who can do it. Maybe he's the one guy who can actually be the biggest guy in the world.
Sure.
So unless you're him, I would find another way to define yourself, and don't do it by trying to be that much bigger.
And, you know, for him, that could be cool because maybe his goal is to be, you know.
You know what? He's the big guy, and the entire city knows him as the big guy. And that's just sure. – but my point is your city has one of him, and you're probably not it. And that's – you're right. Just – I mean, I guarantee you're not it if you're listening to this. So it's – that's, you know, that's not – that's no way to define yourself.
Right. Yeah. Like I said, man – I know this is kind of going, you know, deep in how you feel and depression, but realistically, what we're talking about is how are you defining yourself? Are you defining yourself through, you know, internal on what your goals are based on, you know, how you can contribute to society. Is society going to be, are you going to be, is society or is the world a better place because you're in it? Or is it one of those things where you're basically basing your, you know, overall happiness on what other people think of you that don't really matter? Because that's really what it was.
Based on a bunch of arbitrary metrics that also don't matter.
Right. Yeah, because like I say, in my experience, I mean, those things, the people that really care about those particular things, you know, they're not really the people you kind of want to hang out with anyway.
No. I mean, and let's bring this back. Like,
yeah.
Let's bring this back around. We're not saying don't take care of your body. We're saying that's of vital importance. We're just saying don't take it over the edge. Which is what seems to be how all the diet and fitness marketing is just takes it over the edge. Like, you know, bigger at all costs, as ripped as possible at all costs. Like, neither of those extremes are necessary to have an impressive looking body that you can feel comfortable with. It's when you're told you need to go to these extremes, and that's when your sense of who you are becomes a little, you know, shaky, and you start worrying about it and start wondering, you know, what's wrong with me? Why can't I get to either of these extremes? And the point is, you never had to be at those extremes.
Right. Yeah, I mean, well, the other thing, too, is that the implied benefit of all this stuff is never the real benefit. That never really – what you think the benefit of doing all this stuff, like getting bigger and being able to, you know, pick up chicks in bars and just piling up a bunch of cash for the sake of piling up a bunch of cash. Not saying don't do that. You know, I'm not saying don't pile up cash, but you know what I'm saying? I mean, if you're doing it and buying all the cars, clothes, and stuff
like that.
Well,
it's like money can't buy you happiness, right? That whole thing.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, getting more chicks really can't buy you happiness. I've been there, dude.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's actually an interesting body of research coming out. I think it's in Vancouver, I think at UBC or Victoria. They're researching people the concept of how money and is linked to happiness. And after a certain point, it's more of what you do with it than just having it. And it seemed to be the more you spent money on other people, the more rewarding it was. So it's like it's still how you're going to act. It's just these all of these endpoints. It still matters what you're going to do with it all. So,
well, yeah, these things are just amplifiers. The three-headed dragon, they're just amplifiers of who you really are. So
right.
if you're an asshole and you make more money, well, then you're just going to be a bigger asshole. If you're an asshole and then all of a sudden you figure out how to get chicks, well, you're just going to be a bigger asshole.
And then with drugs, bodybuilding, you're just a really big asshole.
Right, exactly. I mean, they're all just amplifiers, and it's really interesting. Like I say, I know we're going into a different area, but I think it's important because, like I say, I mean, I'm just kind of sharing some of my experiences. John's sharing his experiences. You know, by all means, if you want to kind of go down those routes and test them out for yourself, go ahead. Like I say, we're not saying don't do this, don't do that. We're just relaying our experiences, and you know, if you want to take them, great. If not, you want to test them out, I guarantee you'll find the same results. Eventually.
Well, I guess what we're saying is none of those three things in and of themselves are they're not an end. They're not a goal to shoot for. They're things you can improve in all of those areas, whatever it is, relationships, financial, like career, and your body. But that's all of those improvements come from becoming more centered with who your identity of who you are really is. And you shouldn't let people in the extremes of any of those areas be telling you that that's how you identify yourself.
Okay, so now that you said that, let's go ahead into talking about really quickly. I mean, like really quickly, because we're going to go long. talking about how to deal with naysayers and picking battles and stuff, because this kind of goes back into, you know, being able to defend. You know, I'm not going to say you're going to always, but I mean, you know, when you're doing something like this, you're going to feel the need to defend your position. And that kind of goes into your identity as well. So let's go ahead and get this handled for you.
Yeah, if you're actually taking action on something and it's not within the mainstream group think, which is all of this other stuff we were talking about, you can't be confrontational with people that aren't receptive to how you're doing it. You have to lead by example, and you can't. If they're going to come to you can't – and the other thing is you have to accept is you can't reach everybody. Some people just aren't ready to hear what you're doing or how you're doing it, and they sometimes feel threatened. So I would just say be as least confrontational as possible, be as welcoming as possible, lead them by hand if you have to, try to show them what you're doing, but invite them in. Like, don't like tell them that their thought process or what they believe is wrong, because if you're actually right and they're actually wrong, they're going to feel even dumber for bringing it up and recognizing that how wrong they actually are. So it's really tough to be you're not going to win anyone over by beating them over the head with it. So the only thing you can do is lead by example and just be quiet about it and let them come to you and just be overly welcoming and overly accommodating to help them. And you know, even ask them how they would go about doing it. And especially if you're getting results and they're not, if you ask them first, like what they do and how they're doing, that kind of opens the conversation and shows to them that you're not judgmental and you're actually willing to listen. And so the first thing you need to do is listen to them and almost let them lead you first. And then, you know, don't actually act on anything that you know is not worth acting on, but let them explain their story. And then you can retort with, you know, oh, okay, that's an interesting thing. Well, this is what I do. And then you're not telling them that they should do it. You're just showing them how you do it because they've just shown you what they think. And then that's probably the only way to even have that door open. But in a lot of cases, it's not even worth it, because if it's their belief system and they're holding on to it tightly, you got to evaluate, like, you know, pick your battles. Is it even worth your time? Like, do you really want to get into an argument for no reason with a coworker about weight loss and, like, you've just lost 20 pounds and they haven't? Like, why even bother with that argument? And if you don't, sure. If it's just water cooler stuff, you know, just pass it off as a joke. Accept the fact that they're not ready to do anything about themselves, and just, you know, find something else to do. Go to talk to somebody who you actually care about instead of them.
Right. And you have to understand that pain, and I'm actually doing some research right now and reading up on just pain as a motivator and as a just kind of an overall, signaler of how people act. I mean, there's a lot of, implied loserdom, and you're gonna hear that from me a lot, because when it comes to decision making and things like that, or people having to face, you know, their demons or face the fact that they might be wrong, you know, nobody really wants to say that they're wrong and admit to it or whatever, just because of this pain. I mean, in fact, I'll be honest. I was at a seminar one time, and a guy gets up and the guy on stage is going to help him out with his business or whatever, and basically he said, okay, well, what's your problem? Tell me your problem. And he was talking about it, and then the guy goes, okay, well, you know, here's what you should probably do. Bang, 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 test this out, da da da. And then so it was really funny. Instead of the guy who was asking for help going, oh, you know what, man, thanks a lot, I really appreciate it, I'll go test that right away, he didn't do that. What he did was he started going back and forth with the guy about why his way was right. And then finally the guy was like, well, dude, if your way's right, why the hell are you up here asking me for help?
Yeah, exactly. So some people just aren't ready. They're just not ready to hear it.
Right. So and the thing is that I don't want to say it's implied loserdom all the time, but a lot of times your decisions and your beliefs are part of the core of who you are too. It's kind of your identity, kind of like, you know, people, like, I've never in my life said I'm a bodybuilder, even though technically that's probably what I do. I just don't identify with that. So I've never labeled myself with that. But, you know, people label themselves with being a low carb person or that. So all of a sudden, if that changes, you know, that's their identity that's changing too. And a lot of times that's really kind of hard to get rid of. So you kind of have to recognize. I mean, it's kind of like ripping off a Band-Aid or something. I mean, there's pain involved. And so it's tough. It's tough. I experienced it just the other day trying to explain somebody, you know, they were saying, oh, I just don't feel like that's healthy. And then, you know, I kind of had to go into the, you know, well, why not? What's health? And they were going on metabolism and stuff. And I was like, well, where's the proof? You know, and people are just tripping over, you know, stuff because they're just basically.
Yeah, they're picking and grabbing at, like, weird things that they've got from headlines and this nebulous conception that they hear from either a blog or a magazine. They're just aggregating a bunch of concepts that they've heard a million times in the media, and they're like, I don't know, it just must be wrong. They just shake their heads. They're like, I don't know, that just doesn't sound healthy, and that's the end of it. And there's and there's no point getting to a scientific argument, because even academics don't agree on half of this stuff. So it's like that these arguments don't end no matter how qualified you are. So you just you know, pick your battles. If it's worth your energy and you actually care enough about the person that maybe you need to reach them, you got to be like super patient. But if reaching that one person or winning, it's not really winning the argument, but coming to some conclusion where you've got your piece heard and you've changed them, you're not changing anybody. They're gonna change when they feel like changing. So If it's too much effort and it drains your day and drains your energy, just don't do it. And if you know if it's somebody you care enough about that you'll allow them to drain some of your energy, but you know for the payoff that one day you'll help them, it just accept the fact that it might take a long time and they still may not respond.
Right. Yeah. Don't do it to be right. Do it to help. So,
yeah, that's the best way to say it.
Yeah, I mean, doing something to be right is basically kind of a false ego boost to yourself. I mean, but in my experience, confrontation and being right, even if you're right, you're wrong, and nothing ever happens because now people are all pissed off and stuff. So
I used to fall for that. I used to do that myself. I used to be in I used to do some like public speaking and lecturing on all this stuff. And I had one of the people that hired me. I was lecturing at a university, and one of the people that hired me, she's like, it was a great presentation, but you did too many yes buts. And I'm like, I don't even, what does that mean? She's like, when somebody in the crowd said something, you would go yes but, and then I would retort with like what the right answer was. And she's like, these people aren't here to be corrected by you. They're here like when they, especially the ones who, she's like, they're intimidated. The ones who actually put their hand up and said something. Like that took a lot of courage for them just to say something, and for you to just, she's like, all you ever needed to do was say thank you for your contribution. But what I was trying to do, what I didn't get at the time, was I was trying to make sure the crowd still knew what the right answer was, and the crowd didn't at that point. The crowd didn't care. Like I was already the expert at the front of the room. It's not like they were trying to like fight me. They just brought up like ideas, and
sure.
And I didn't get that at the time, and that was the difference between being right and helping. And just like she helped me get the idea of help versus being right.
Right. Yeah. Sometimes you have to let people kind of flounder a little bit, but be the person there with the life jacket, if that makes sense. So.
Oh yeah, it's like the parent letting the kid go out and trip and fall and cut their knee and be like, see, it hurts, right? So maybe you don't do that next time.
Right. I mean, but you just kind of like you get in that argument or whatever, and people are saying, well, I don't think that's healthy. And remember, health. Somebody saying something's unhealthy is like saying something's a scam. We've talked about this before. It's a very people say that to instantaneously discredit anything that you say. So if somebody says, "Oh, that's unhealthy," like immediately it's an attempt to discredit anything you say.
Yeah, because there's no definition for health.
Right. Same thing with scam. It's, that's got to be a scam. I mean, right then, that whoever's listening is like. They kind of flock to that and like, oh yeah, it must be a scam just because somebody said it. Same thing with unhealthy. So, be careful with that. And what I'm getting to now, because like I say, we've all kind of struggled with this. We are all in a position now where we're thinking differently about all of this stuff, thinking a lot simpler and actually getting better results. And now it's to the point where, people will ask me and I'll tell them and they'll like, well, I just don't think that'll work. And I'm like, well, it's working for me. And, they'll say, well, I just think that's going to kill your metabolism. That's just going to do this and do that. And I'm like, okay, well, what's your goal right now? And they'll tell me. And I was like, well, what are you doing right now? Oh, well, I'm doing this. Well, how's that working for you? Well, it's working a little bit. I'm like, okay, well, get up with me about 2 weeks and let me know how things are going. And, if you need me to help you out, I will. If you've got it under control, then that's great. And what tends to happen is that, in that two-week time, they'll kind of be like, they'll get fed up. Like, they're like, damn it, man, this isn't working. Maybe that guy's onto something after all. And then you just kind of, you don't have to say, I told you so. You just kind of say, hey man, you know what, man, this is where you get to relate to somebody and be like, hey man, dude, I felt the same way. But you know what? I found this out. This helped me out a lot, man. Here, why don't you test this out for a week or two? I guarantee it's going to change the way you think about this stuff. And people are more receptive to that. It's not trying to beat them over the head. It's like being the helping hand and being, I've been there. I've been in the same position.
Yeah. When you burst somebody's bubble, it's not comfortable for them.
No.
But if you also explain that you used to live in the same bubble and yours burst too, then they feel way better about it.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just kind of realize that you're not trying to fight with people. You're not trying to be right. You're trying to help. And
right.
It's a very different perspective. You know, because if you really want to help, you don't want people to put walls up around you.
Right. And that's where the right-wrong thing can definitely get in the way.
Yeah, definitely.
So, well, I mean, I guess that's good for today. We should wrap up.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, we kind of covered a lot of stuff. I mean, the body dysmorphia, you know, muscle gaining. I mean, we talked about a lot. I even forget what we talked about, to be honest. Basically, slaying the three-headed dragon, identity.
Don't let your identity be an arbitrary number that other people are impressed with, but you're not.
Right, exactly. And you'll know. You'll know. It's an empty feeling. If you ever start getting an empty feeling about something, you need to reevaluate. You know, I've been there, done that, and, you know, I'm not, like I say, not saying I'm right, you're wrong. Just saying I've been there, and you may feel the same thing. So,
yeah.
I think that, you got anything else? I think that about covers everything we need to cover today.
No, next week. We got it.
Yeah, I was going to say next week we got the Ron interview. We got Ron, right?
Yep.
Yep. So we'll let you listen in on that. Ron actually won the contest last time around, so we'll let you hear about his mentality and how he actually made the decision that he was going to win. So that's really interesting. So for John, I am Brad, and this is your Adonis Lifestyle Podcast.